Our planet is a lonely speck in the great cosmic dark.
This is Chrissy.
And I'm Marie.
And you're listening to Alt Pop Repeat,
a show where we get into the nitty gritty around counterculture, alternative culture, and sync it up with what?
With pop culture.
Yeah, man. That's what we do.
There we go.
High five. Yes. Welcome back. Welcome back, friends.
You keep everybody entertained. I'm going to look up vegan items here.
So as you can tell, our show today is about veganism/vegetarianism. I'll put that in there as well. And so Marie is going to quiz me because I don't know as much about vegan products as Marie does. So Marie's going to quiz me on what is vegan and what isn't vegan.
All right. Let's
and then go. I have to guess.
What go. Junk food items are vegan? Okay. Okay, we'll do some.
I'm gonna suck at this, but that's okay.
There's some 20 accidentally vegan foods. Let's try this. This sounds fun. I like the accidentally.
Quiz away.
Okay.
Okay.
Here we go. Okay.
Clear that through.
So.
Yeah.
Is this product vegan or not?
Okay.
Duncan Hines brownie mix.
Vegan.
Correct.
Nice. That was a guess.
Good job. Good job. Good job. Good job. How about fruit by the foot?
Not vegan.
Vegan.
Really?
Yeah. It's like fruit roll-ups, man.
I was just thinking maybe the gelatin.
Okay. This one's easy. Lay's classic potato chips.
Vegan.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if it's not, I'm like, what is going into Lay's?
Hershey's chocolate syrup.
Not.
Vegan.
It's vegan. Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
This one you know. I know you know this because we talked about this earlier.
Is it gummy bears?
Well, it can be gummy bears.
Yeah, it's not vegan.
Yeah, those aren't vegan.
No.
Oreos.
You told me, so I know.
See, that one you know.
That one's vegan.
Jell-O cook and serve pudding.
That's not vegan.
It is vegan.
It is vegan?
Yeah.
I thought gelatin, though, has some animal byproduct.
Jell-O pudding. Doesn't have gelatin in it.
See, the Jell-O word caught me off guard.
Yeah. So it's Jell-O cook and serve pudding pie filling. So the actual pudding mix pie. Itself is vegan.
Yeah.
And then you, like, typically you would put milk in it, but if you're vegan, you don't have to put dairy milk in it. You can use non-dairy milk.
There you go. It was the pudding pop pies. Isn't that like a Jell-O thing? Like, totally butchered that.
Yeah. That's not a thing. But I mean, the thing is,
it is now.
There's a fun one here. How about bacon pieces? You know, like shelf.
Bacon bites?
Yeah, like
bacon bites. Oh, those are fake. They're not real. Yeah, I was going to say, that's artificial.
Yeah.
It's like crab meat. Like, crab meat's not real.
Yeah,
sorry to break anybody's heart if they thought it was real.
Well, crab meat from crabs is real. But like,
yeah, but not the artificial. Like, right.
No,
the artificial crab meat.
Not the ones that you...
No, I know
vegan.
Real crabs.
Like, in the California roll, clearly... Well, it's
fake
vegan,
crab.
But it's fake crab.
It's fake crab. Right.
It's fish. Right. But fake bacon is fake bacon. It's actually vegan.
Yes.
Bacon pieces. Doritos.
Ooh.
Spicy sweet chili nachos.
Nachos? I'm going to say not vegan.
No, those are actually vegan.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, look at that. Well, maybe now I actually did better than I thought I would.
Yeah, you did really
That's
great.
That's not that bad. So let's segue into our guest. Who is our guest today, Marie?
Our guest is one person. You could say that she is hot for food. Also the name of her brand associated with her. It's Lauren Toyota, and she is a vegan, and she is a personality on YouTube. She's got a fantastic Instagram channel, also called Hot for Food.
Yes.
And she's got some cookbooks, doesn't she?
Yes, she does. She has two cookbooks, but she has a new cookbook that's out called Hot for Food All Day, Easy Recipes to Level Up Your Vegan Meals. So get those, because Lauren Toyota has the best vegan cookbooks and they have a lot of comfort food recipes
like
in them.
Like tasty.
So good. Looks amazing and it looks as good as it tastes.
So good. And our conversation with her about veganism was so interesting because we were able to explore what it is and how it came about and what it means and all of those really fun things. So
let's roll into the interview.
Yeah.
And in the end,
we sync it up.
I became vegan officially January 1st, 2010. And my why was really because by that point in time, I had already experimented with vegetarianism and flip-flopping back and forth to eating meat. And by that point in my life, a few months before, as I transitioned, it was like, I feel sick, you know, and I had to make a change. So I just slowly took one thing out at a time. And it was always in the back of my mind, like this little whisper of like, you know, you're going to have to give up all animal products at some point, right? And I just wouldn't give up cheese and dairy. I just had a tough time because food is it's such a social activity. I love food and it's like hard to say no to things, you know?
Yeah.
I felt like that's the thing I didn't want to do. I didn't want to be annoying and restrictive, but I eventually had to just change because my body was just saying, yelling at me to do it.
And a lot of people decide to be vegans because of the, you know, we look at PETA and things like that for animals. Was that a big part of it as well too? Or was it just fully diet? Because you have other things like environmental issues that play a part of veganism as well too.
Yeah, for sure. Those were there as well. I would say the loudest point was like health and well-being. I just always kind of felt like eating less saturated animal fat would be healthiest. You know, I can remember thinking that very early on in my life, like as a young teenager, because that's when I went vegetarian. And to speak to kind of like more that underground reason, I think is like to be vegetarian at that time, you know, in the 90s, it was the alternative lifestyle, right? Like it was the underground weird. It was the punk kids. It was the straight edge kids. It was like bands who were vegetarian or vegan. And I think that is truly where I heard about the influence. I remember like even Lisa on The Simpsons goes vegetarian. And like, I remember those all playing a part in why I wanted to go vegetarian. Cause I never liked being the status quo. Like I was always like, if I was expected to be a certain way, I wanted to do the opposite. And I think that's where the decision about going vegetarian at like age 12 came from, was that alternative kind of movement and decision for sure. And then that just started to fizzle as I got older. And I think wanted to just, it's funny how you have different identities, right? Like I've always been that kind of alternative person, I would say. But in terms of diet, you know, I think being influenced by people going to college is when I actually broke my vegetarianism. You're drinking, you're partying, you're like being lazy with your diet. And like, I fell right off that and started eating meat again. So, but I think, yeah, I mean, it started from that more pure place, like that more niche place, but activism wasn't something in my mind, but I always have loved animals. So it was like, I can't eat animals. I love animals. I have a special connection with them. Yeah. And that played into it as well.
Do you feel that being able to adopt veganism as a diet is truly a product of privilege?
It's a good question. I do think it is, because I think to be exposed to that idea of that lifestyle comes with privilege to a degree. Obviously, I can't speak to diets around the world that are primarily vegetarian. You know, I think the North American diet is very anti-vegetarian, anti-vegan, but if you go to, you know, other places in the world, they're eating primarily plant-based. So that's like one way where you're exposed, and I can't speak to that. But in North America, I do think, yeah, there is some level of privilege one has just to even be exposed to it, you know. Two, though, my butt comes in, because you don't have to consume a vegan diet that oozes privilege. You don't have to. A lot of the base foods, you know, we're talking about Indian food and food from other cultures, is primarily legumes and grains. So you can, in fact, eat cheaper on a vegan diet, if you have the knowledge, which sometimes comes with privilege, to be able to shop and cook that way. And when you're not grown, when you don't get raised that way, then you think, what the heck? It seems so foreign and weird to you to have to cook beans from a bag and all these types of things we're just not used to, right? So I think there's two sides to this. I think there's a big chunk of it that has to do with knowledge and education and, like I said, exposure to the lifestyle. The product thing, I mean, I can see why products are more expensive because there's less demand. When you've got everybody consuming chicken like it's, you know, at the rate that we do, and beef at the rate that we do, they can make sure that it's cheap, not to mention it's subsidized by the government because it's all a sham. So...
Okay, you can't, it's all a sham. So why is it all a sham? And then continue on.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of money to be made in animal agriculture, right? And that this is why it's subsidized by the government. And I mean, I can't speak to every factual piece of information regarding this argument, but I'm hip to this system that we're part of. You know, we're cogs in this system of like consuming meat because I watched these documentaries and I read books. And that's like, once I started transitioning to a vegan diet, that's what I was consuming. And it was like solidifying my decision to go vegan. It was like, I don't want to use my money and use my vote with my purchases to contribute to this awful, cruel system that we are brainwashed into being a part of, you know, by being told that milk does a body good and you need to eat X amount of grams of protein that comes from a cow. Like, all of these are lies. So, you know, part of my mission is like now spreading that information and trying to just be a better citizen by not using my money or my privilege to contribute to these awful systems that disenfranchise people like farmers and poor communities, you know what I mean? Because of environmental reasons and animal factory farming runoff and stuff like that. Right. I just gave you a whole bunch of things to think about. But to go back to the product thing, there's less demand. So they have to have the price points higher for now because the ingredients cost more. They're using things that aren't in all of our regular everyday products. But the more demand, the cheaper they will become.
It's really interesting because, like, now we see these products, meat alternatives and meat substitutes, or I like to call them fake meat, is really, it's something I've been so fascinated with. I mean, Chrissy and I have talked about the introduction of Impossible Burger, Beyond Beef. Those are two, Light Life. There's like a lot of brands that are coming out with very good meat substitutes. And they're being carried in mainstream fast food restaurants, like in Canada at A&W. I believe Burger King has Impossible Burger. McDonald's to date has no burger.
Soon.
But they're all getting adopted into like mainstream. People are starting to gravitate towards meat alternatives. And to Chrissy's point, in some cases, like a fake chicken cutlet, tastes pretty similar to a processed chicken cutlet, but there is so many more nutrients in it. So if the change is happening, why do you think that change is happening, and why do you think it's happening now? Is it the products or the people?
I think it's the people and the demand, and bigger than that, it's, I mean, tech, right? Like, technology has affected every aspect of our lives in terms of ingenuity and evolution and progressiveness. And so it was only, you know, technology's always been used in food, but I think for sure to be able to have more sustainable sources of food and feed more people and think about the environmental impact that factory farming that people have known for decades and decades is problematic, but we've been very good at compartmentalizing and ignoring that. Finally, due to really a handful of amazing, you know, genius people having great ideas. I mean, that's how our society propels forward. They've implemented those same kind of tech ideas into food. And that's where you get Impossible and Beyond. And I love it. Like, I think from the time I went vegan, 2009, 2010, till now, the drastic difference of the vegan landscape is so crazy. And I would say just even in the last 3 to 4 years of my vegan lifestyle, that's when it's really picked up this momentum.
We talk about,
you know, we have people that are lobbying for meat and saying, you know, like for example, milk, you were saying, and, you know, have this X amount of type of food because it's healthy for you. And we know that that's really not true anymore. Do you think that vegan lobbyists are doing the similar thing in context of fast food? Because a lot of people that I say, like when I talk to them, I go, you know, I love a Beyond Meat burger. Don't get me wrong. And I think they're a really great alternative too. But they think it's healthy. People think it's something that they can consume all the time because it's really healthy for them. Not in context being vegan, but what's in the product. Mm-hmm. They don't realize that there's not all of those products, and there are different types of vegan products, I would imagine, and you can tell me, Lauren, if not, that some are healthy and some aren't healthy.
Yeah, you're going to have a lot of subjectivity in this conversation. I myself have always been of the mind that if I'm eating plant-based foods, yeah, I'm relatively on the side of healthy.
You're on the ladder.
Even if it's full of fat. Even if it's full right. of fat, it's not saturated animal fat. Yeah. Not to mention the bigger picture of health, which is how does my choice not just affect me, but what is the ripple effect of my choice, which is the health of the environment? And so I look at health. I don't like the word healthy or health. I don't use it, but it's much more a holistic view like that in terms of the effect that my decision has on everything else. And so my kind of general umbrella rule is like, if it's vegan, eat it and support it and don't worry about it. But of course, you can't eat a burger every day. And so you can't eat a vegan burger every day. It's all about balance. I don't know where this messaging of vegan being healthy really came from. But I too fell into that trap of when I first started to go vegan, I was eating uber healthy, nearly raw, because that was all of the information that was available, was eating raw food. Yeah. Those were the cookbooks. Those were the only couple restaurants available were raw food restaurants. So you'd have raw cashew cheese, dehydrated flax bread, really crunchy shit that like is great, but I do not want to eat that every day. No. And I fell into that trap at the beginning. And so it's hard to say, like, where's this messaging coming from of like eating a McDonald's plant-based burger or an A&W plant-based burger is healthy. But I would say it's the healthier choice. It's the healthier choice. And if you want to eat a burger, as you should, and you deserve it, just make the healthier choice.
Like, because I know that vegan, the term vegan there was a stigma behind it, and then it's been considered negative. Now we're going more positive. But there's this fight between meat eaters and vegans now, mm-hmm. and that always when you're a vegetarian or a vegan, you're crucifying the meat eaters. Is that stigma still around? Do you find that even being a vegan that people pinpoint you instead of being like, oh, this is Lauren and Lauren's a vegan. Let me introduce you to my friend instead of being like, I'm just a person who likes food. So do you still feel that stigma is stuck?
Yeah. I have to explain myself constantly still. And that's okay. because for me, I look at it as a education point, and I've really worked hard at making sure that I do it in an approachable, non-judgy way, because I'm not going to help anyone by being that way. And I'm happy to have conversations about what it is I'm eating and what's in it, because I know that I don't need to defend anything. I can matter-of-factly just say what it is and why it's better. I think there'll always be the argument for like, people are really hung up on this, like, you know, hunter gatherer, you know, paleo rhetoric of like, we're supposed to eat meat. And then there's the rhetoric of like, actually our teeth are different. We're not supposed to eat meat. Our teeth are made for grinding plant fiber, you know?
Right.
I'm not here to get into the minutia and convince everybody about every little thing, right? That's not my role. My role is like, let's just talk about food. Vegan food is food. And let's just talk about food. Let's just eat really good food. Let's learn how to cook really good food. And hopefully I can just encourage you to just make a few swaps. And, you know, like Marie, you said, just like swap the chicken cutlet for the vegan chicken cutlet. You will not notice the difference. You will have helped the environment. You will have helped save chickens, and you'll feel better. You know, you won't be clogging your arteries. So I like to just try to get that be the conversation, you know?
What was your catalyst moment that you think in, like, we'll just say in any time within history and something like that, any time that you found that, you know, veganism really turned into mainstream pop culture, what was like a defining moment, would you say, would be for yourself when you feel that that happened?
So I went vegan in January 1st, 2010. I was like, no turning back. Here we go. And at that time, I worked in television. As you know, I worked at Much Music. Later that year, I started working at Much Music, actually. So I was very hush about my veganism. I hadn't even gotten on Instagram yet. I didn't get on Instagram with Hot for Food until 2012. So I was hush about it. I thought, you know, there's the TV me and there's the vegan me. They don't need to intermesh. I don't need to talk about it. I don't need to get on my soapbox now that I'm a TV host and do that. But there actually was a turn. So in 2012, I got my Instagram account at Hot for Food. And I would say this combined with this other story was sort of when I started seeing it change. But, you know, Instagram was a great place. The internet is a great place to really tap into any niche that you want. Like, there's something for everybody, right? If you like the weirdest thing in the world, you'll find a group of people who love it. And so as soon as I got on Instagram, you know, and at that time, 2012, people were foodstagramming and taking pictures, you know, the joke of people standing at restaurant up on their chairs. I mean, that was the time this started. So I always look back at like the timing of when I decided to go vegan and like enter this online space was like perfect synchronistic timing, because who could have predicted, but I happened to sort of get in there at the right time. So I noticed that. I mean, I don't think it was quite mainstream because vegan was still niche on Instagram, but there was a community there, and through the hashtags and whatnot, I could find other people who were like me. So that was one thing. But by 2013, I had started doing some work on Much Music. I had hosted a daily show, and I started also doing reporting for MTV Canada because we were in the same building. And I remember it was this weird time of when no one was really supervising what we were doing, and we had to do these MTV news segments, and it was just like a free for all. And they wanted personal stories. And I remember finally kind of like coming out of the vegan closet at this time about, people knew I was vegan because I talked about it at work a bit, but like, this now was a point where I did like a documentary segment on my own journey. And it's because at that point I had only eaten vegan. I hadn't made any other switches in my life. I was still wearing leather. I'd even wore fur. Oh my God. To the fucking Juno red carpet once. And I like fully regret doing that. And like, I just didn't care. For me, it was like food, and I wasn't yet at the next stage of it, which always scared me because it's like, if I'm going to fully commit, and then I'm going to have to be accountable all the time. And I was like scared to do that, right? But I pretty much did that by like putting this segment. So they let me put this segment. It was like a 10-minute, two-part segment on MTV Canada that aired across the country. And I felt like for me and my own individual journey, that's when it went mainstream, because I was like declaring it. I was getting emotional on camera about my decisions and my journey and my apprehensions and my stigmatism around activism and all of that stuff. Like, it was all about like, how are people going to view me now? They're going to think I'm this crazy vegan, right? But I felt like by going on television and having the opportunity, and for even like letting, like having them let that go to air, was huge, I feel like. And I remember it connected me to the activism community, and I made so many friends in the community by doing it. And I felt like I just opened this whole other door. And that's when Hot for Food started to really become a bigger part of my life. And just that let me like walk through and own it, you know, and go for it.
Wow. So veganism is interesting because it's like, for the longest time, it was not as, like, it's everywhere now. It's everywhere now.
Everyone is somewhat of a vegan. The reason why I say that.
Everyone is somewhat?
Somewhat of a vegan, yeah. Because, let me find this. It's in my notes. Well, for us, I don't know about Americans, but the Canadian Food Guide says that, recommends that we should eat more plants, less meat. Yeah. So everyone, if you looked at the Canadian Food Guide, would be a little vegan or more vegetarian, because you should technically abide by the Canadian Food Guide. And it hasn't switched. They haven't switched the Canadian Food Guide. It started in 1942. Like, they haven't made an adjustment to the food guide till recently. Yeah. I find that crazy. That's a long time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there was like minor adjustments in the 90s because they were starting to recognize meat alternatives. And then now I think it's just protein. And yeah. They've rejigged the entire. But it's a really good point. We're starting to reframe our thought around food. But where did that thought process come from? That's the part I think is really interesting, because I mean, you take a look at just anecdotally throughout history,
yeah,
that concept of having meat was associated with prosperity
for sure.
And animals were like hunting. This was like, you were rich if you had an entire banquet filled with animal products, meats, all of these rare, hard to come by foods. But when you looked at vegetables, that was considered to be food of the peasants, with the exception on Prince Edward Island, where lobster was considered to be food of the peasants.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, I know. Back in the day, that is one of those things where I'm like, really? Time travel, huh? Doesn't exist yet. That's a bummer. But regardless, lobsters aside, you know, this idea that meat was really associated with being like successful, and it was gluttonous, and it was all these wonderful things that would just like show how successful you were in life. And all it was doing was creating an environment for heart attacks.
True. But here's the thing that I wonder, and it's not that I agree with veganism and vegetarianism. I think it's wonderful. I also do agree that you probably should have more plant-based foods in your diet.
Yeah.
But when they recommend eating more plant-based foods, I think some people misconstrue that with junk food that's vegan, that's okay. And also, I think there's this whole misconception around what is healthy plant-based food. Because we've looked at some plant-based foods and they're high in chemicals, which is not good for you, and it's overly processed. Mm-hmm. So there is this misconception, I think, within Beyond Meat Burger being super healthy for you when it's not. So when you're consuming, so if somebody was looking at this and they're like, okay, I have to consume more plant-based foods. So then they go to the store and they buy all this, you know, artificial chicken, plant-based chicken, but it's loaded with chemicals and it's not that healthy for you because it's processed, majorly processed. People think they're doing themselves something good for their body when they actually should probably just be eating meat. So the whole idea of education around veganism is not always talked about because everyone's following, and veganism is not a trend, but it's like becoming a trend,
yeah,
that people are jumping on, even though it's a lifestyle and it's a choice. So that's when I look at Beyond, because I never knew that about Beyond Meat. I thought it was healthy too, because that's how they market it to you.
Well,
they make it look like it's a healthier version than eating a hamburger.
It is.
Right. But it's also filled with a lot of fillers.
It has a lot of sodium in it, which Tons. Is the main problem. And you're right where.
And you shouldn't be eating Beyond Meat burgers all the time.
Oh,
you should,
no.
Right. Like, right? You should be eating other things that are plant-based that are healthier for you than like instead being like, well, I'm just going to eat Beyond Meat burger every day. Like, no way. Like, sorry, Beyond Meat burger. I don't mean to,
the race,
to catch up, but hey, seriously.
It's interesting like how we got to Beyond Meat burger, because it is a part of like literally probably, it is a part of centuries of evolution and understanding on how plant-based foods are a viable option. Now, like back in the day, whenever it was the peasants, it was those who did not have the money to have all the meat or the time to do all the hunting, and they were eating all the vegetables. It was sustainable for them. It's still sustainable to this day. But how do we get to the point where now we're investing more money than ever, more time than ever, more attention than ever into meat alternatives? And there's like, obviously there's tons of history when we're looking at this, and we'll get into that. But that path really came about when we were going into, I want to say maybe the 90s. So yep. Veganism for a long, long time was really focused on it being a health or a saving animals, and that eating meat was cruel. And that's an idea that went back even to the 18th century.
For sure.
But once we made that shift in the 90s towards factory farming.
Yes.
And it started to bring to light in a really public, and thanks to the internet and that thanks to mass media, these messages were starting to get out to the public.
Right.
So we as consumers were now getting connected to how the meat that we were buying in the stores that was so perfectly processed and packed up and beautiful, we now were looking at that and we were seeing the story behind it. And it was reframing our thoughts about factory farming.
Right. And it's not ethical farming, right? It's hopefully changing and we're seeing that. But you're right. Like, us eating animals is a byproduct of climate change. That's part of it. It's not helping our climate, along with then all of factory farming. It's 100% true.
Yeah.
And so I agree that a lot of people are learning more because they're watching different documentaries.
Yeah. Documentaries. What was the
lots of documentaries.
What was the, oh my gosh. What was the first, there was a big one that came out, Food Inc.
That, yep. It was great.
Food Inc.
That scared the crap out of me. I remember watching when they went into the chicken coop and they had the chickens in the dark, I believe, so that they would lay eggs, and they were working like 24/7. So they were, it's so cruel. And I remember watching that and going, I never knew that they did that, along with veal, what they do to little lambs. I know it. I don't even like talking about it because I still eat meat. I have a hard time getting off meat. That sounds bad. Get off a hard time.
I mean, we are in quarantine.
That's true.
All feeling the exact same
just
way.
Just a little bit. I do eat meat, but I also eat a lot of other plant-based options as well.
It's like I would say if we're going to jump around and do some sinks, yep. I agree. I do eat
Beyond
lot
Meat
of,
burgers first sink, I would say. For sure.
I mean, we've touched on a couple already. We touched on Food Inc., which was a documentary in 2008, which brought factory farming to light.
Yep.
We touched a little bit about the shift on thinking about how eating animals is cruel, and not eating animals is saving animals from cruelty and certain death. So that's the kind thing to do, which I think is where a lot of people sat in the 90s.
Yeah.
The fake fur campaigns, I would rather die than wearing fur from PETA.
Yep.
It was a campaign that PETA came out with. And I'm sure we could even, if we wanted to do the clip right here, we could pop in a clip because there is Naomi Campbell and famous supermodels of the time were enlisted by PETA to help get the message out that when you wear fur, it's not ethical. It's not just about eating meat. It's about making choices and looking at all the products that are coming from the animals that are being slaughtered needlessly for either meat or fur, or basically just like anything the humans want.
While most of the models in Paris were being paid enormous sums of money for wearing clothes during Haute Couture Week, five big-time beauties decided to take them all off for free and pose starkers for an anti-fur billboard campaign.
I agreed to do this ad because I think it's a very important message to get across the world, and I think because we are public figures, instead of people using it for bad, for press and for tabloids, it's good to be put, if you do have a name that's known to the public, I think it's good to use it for important things like this.
Campaign sponsored by the American-based anti-fur group PETA began last month with supermodel Christy Turlington shedding it all for the cameras. The billboards that will be produced from this particular photo shoot are scheduled to appear throughout Europe, North America, and Japan early next month.
So here's my question to that. Do you think that you have to care about animal welfare and you can still be vegan or vegetarian? Or are they mutually exclusive?
That's a good question. I would say that anything that gets you to veganism is a valid reason. So if for me, I care about animals. I do care about animals, and I quite often go on cruelty-free diets, which means that I'm not eating any animal products for an extended period.
But why are you doing it? For health? Are you doing it because you care about animals and their well-being? Are you doing it for both, or Are you just doing it because it's a trend? Because everyone else is doing it. More than likely, I know you're not doing it because it's a trend.
More than likely, it's not doing it.
Yeah, well, but usually, that's kind of the categories I see where people sit in veganism and vegetarianism.
Yeah. Back in the day, it was, it's cruel to eat meat. I care for animals. I will not eat meat. Now, there's so many other reasons why people come into it. It's like health, for sure. They're all valid reasons. Again, any reason that gets you to eating more plant-based like products is a valid reason. And it's a part of that journey. But for me personally, like if I do, again, like if it's cruelty-free, it's usually about eating foods that are not causing harm or negative energy to other living beings.
Right.
So that's usually the perspective that I go. And that's why I call it a cruelty-free, because then it frames it whenever I'm going shopping and I'm looking at the products. Obviously, chicken, cruelty, don't eat it. Or fish. Fish kind of is like on a line for me, but because I really just see them as swimming vitamins, but which is a frame of thought. But I mean, if I'm on cruelty free, then likely I'm not going to eat fish. I'm not going to eat cheese. I'm not going to eat dairy. So,
well, the big part of over farming fish and salmon is a big deal. Like people are over farming salmon immensely right now.
Well, the scourge of the earth is the human population. Unfortunately, like we're, the krill that whales need to survive, we're harvesting for omega-3. Like we're just, there's so many ways that humans are abusing the planet that a really easy way to go into a space of creating sustainable products is by eating more plant-based, because plants are sustainable. They eat up CO2 emissions. There's other ways that it's problematic. I mean, there are issues with abusing labor in order to produce the crops. There is problems with using pesticides. I mean, there's everything. There is a problem to everything. So we're working our way out to try and solve it. But if we're looking at that timeline in which we considered veganism and vegetarianism as a very valid place to sit, it's a very short period of time.
Oh, for sure. 100% it is. It's not that long. And it's a very small group of people in the beginning.
Super small.
The other part was The Economist in 2019 declared that the year of the vegan. So that says a lot too when you have The Economist coming up, just because of market trends. This is where we get into the trend part of stuff, because people are more mindful about farming, ethical farming now that they would like, and obviously climate change. So we're looking at products and brands and companies that are going towards that because they're making more money off it because people are demanding it. So that's one sink, I would say, is The Economist in a mass media perspective. Mm-hmm. But then we look at fast food, and that is reflective of The Economist too. You get things like Tim Hortons, A&W, picking up Beyond Meat Burger, all fast food chains, supermarkets for sure, putting in fast food and marketing it in places that you can consume it better. They put it in the plant-based sections most of the time.
Well, people forget too. So anybody who's like, if anybody's listening to this and we are the sink to you, we are that bridge that gets you to try something plant-based. And now neither of us are perfect. We do still eat some meat products, but we see like,
well, I wouldn't say vegetarians are perfect or vegans are perfect.
We're on the journey.
Yeah. Well, right? I don't think if you're a vegan, that means that if you're not eating meat, it means that you're perfect in your lifestyle. I'll never stop eating meat. Like, I won't. And, I'm sorry, but I will be mindful of the food I eat, and I have to get better at the ethical farming and the meat I eat. That's more of where I think I want to lean to. And I also do eat lots of plant-based products, but I don't want to be fully vegan. I've thought about it multiple times, and I don't want to be. I enjoy my protein, but I want to choose where I decide to get my protein.
Yeah.
I want to be able to know that it's coming from something that is ethical and also healthy, because there's a lot of crappy real meat too that's pumped with just anything you can imagine, like, as well.
Factory farming is a scourge. Industrial farming complex is the worst. It's interesting because I find myself continuously on the path to try getting closer and closer and closer to being either vegan or vegetarian. And
I wouldn't do it right. That's why I wouldn't do it properly. That's why I won't do it, because I know that I would not be able to, I would not be healthy. I would not be healthy if I decided. I would love to do it, but I just wouldn't be healthy at all doing it.
What makes you think you wouldn't be healthy when you do it?
My lifestyle is really busy. So I have to know that I'm pumping in enough protein into my body and nutrition outside of meat substitute or outside of meat, and knowing that I'm getting that good balance. Right. And I don't know how to do that yet. I would really need a lot of education. Right. And I would need someone to teach me. Like, I've actually called a friend and said, can you take me to your vegan grocery store? And I want to watch you shop. I'm not even joking.
Yam chops.
Yeah. I want to see you shop and how you shop, because he's actually a really healthy vegan. It doesn't mean that vegans aren't healthy and that vegetarianism isn't healthy. It's just how you do it. And I like the way that he consumes. And I also see him being super healthy, and he's very mindful of his diet. So I want to go that direction.
Yeah.
And learn from him, because I like his lifestyle that way. But I wouldn't be able to do it now because I just wouldn't do it well. I'd be super anemic.
It's really interesting because now coming into veganism, the going back to touch on the like Beyond Burgers and all that, now coming into it, there's so many different products and there's so many different options that sure. you can kind of dip your toe in.
I don't know
in,
them.
Whereas before it was a little bit challenging. And I agree, going back to when we were talking about Beyond and how there's a high sodium and it's not a quote unquote healthy choice. Well, you shouldn't be obviously eating burgers exclusively in any context, but it's true. Like, you need to reframe and rethink how the world of food, and there's so many culinary options out there that a lot of people don't know, because in the Western world, and this is why when we're talking about veganism, we're talking it from the Western world.
Because, oh, right. True.
Like, we got to specify, because obviously, like, if you're in India, like Buddhism, there is Jainism, there is all sorts of religions and parts of the world where they
sure.
dedicated themselves to vegan and vegetarian
They're the original
diets.
Vegans, vegetarians.
But it took so long for us to take it in the Western world. And I mean, it flipped back and forth by being like, okay, we're not going to do this because we don't want to be causing suffering to animals, which was like an 18th century proposition. Then we're coming into the 40s, and there was like tuberculosis was on the rise, and there was people was catching it, I guess, from dairy and cows. So they suggested, this is in Britain, that that a vegan lifestyle was protecting people from tainted food and tainted food products. So veganism was kind of introduced then to a small degree. And then there was even a vegan society was created yeah. around that time. My favorite little piece on the vegan society was they only had 25 subscribers when this launched. And it started with 3 months after the term was coined in, again, it was 1944. By a British woodworker named Donald Watson. And he needed to create a term that separated people that did not eat dairy and eggs, because he had determined that vegetarians did. And that is also tuberculosis was found in the dairy. Veganism was shared as an option to protect people from the tainted food. They put out a newsletter. It only had 25 subscribers, but 3 months in, they had to tell people that it's pronounced vegan, not vegan. And I don't know why, but I love the idea when people are looking at the word and there was like,
Vegan.
I'm a Vegan. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I don't eat dairy or eggs. I'm a Vegan. Thank you. They were very specific about the phonetic spelling.
It's good though.
And then he died at age 95. He lived a ripe old wow. age. In 2005, he passed away. And at that time, there was 250,000 self-identifying vegans in Britain, 2 million in the U.S.
Wow.
And in 2005 also was probably one of the years, the first years of the celebrity vegan, the Woody Harrelsons, the Fiona Apples. They started to come out and just being like, hey, here I am. I'm loud, proud, and vegan.
I think a lot of celebrities that helped push that movement. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Also,
he was a bodybuilder. He's the first, one of the first bodybuilders that I know of that became vegan. And now he's still bodybuilding, and that's all he has. He's an animal based.
He is an animal. He yeah. is a carbon based vegan.
Yes. It's a big one. But yeah, the celebrity movement of veganism for sure, and vegetarianism immensely pushed it into
pop
culture.
Can you think of other celebrity vegans besides Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Ellen? She's a vegan.
Yeah, Portia de Rossi is as well.
Yeah.
Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, he did a whole thing about animals and being vegan at when he accepted an award for, I think, The Joker.
Oh.
Natalie Portman. Liam Hemsworth. He's a hottie. Woody Harrelson, obviously, we just said. Pamela Anderson, a good Canadian.
Yes.
Badu, Moby. Brian Adams. Steve-O.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, I mean, it goes on. Like, there's, it is, I mean, it's mainstream. Veganism is mainstream.
So I'm going to segue into that because most of these people are on TV or in film. Let's back up.
I backed up.
Beep, 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 beep. Backing up. So the stereotype in mainstream media of a vegan or a vegetarian usually is killjoy, unattractive hippie, weak, feminized, sentimental moron. Those crazy vegans. Here's some terms and some words that usually are words that describe being a vegan when you're on TV. Some of those celebrities that are vegan, though, in real life are not, maybe some of them are like that, but they're not portrayed as that as people. But within television, that's how they're generally portrayed. So we look at the past decade of television, all of the ways that we have talked about someone being a vegan or a character that we've created or the archetype of the character is usually negative. So Lisa Simpson, that's the clip I want to play right now.
I will take your Lisa Simpson clip.
And when
we're
me?
Done, I'm going to raise you.
Okay. So the Lisa Simpson clip is her, it's just a quick clip of her being with a group of friends and what they say and how they refer to Lisa as being vegetarian, because she's not a vegan, she's vegetarian. She might turn into a vegan later on, but she starts as vegetarian. So I'm gonna pop it in right now.
Look, it's Mrs. Potato Head. She has a head made out of lettuce.
I can't believe I used to go out with you.
Are you gonna marry a carrot, Lisa?
Yes, I'm gonna marry a carrot.
She admitted it!
She admitted she's gonna marry a carrot!
I can't believe it!
Love The Simpsons, always. That showing, first of all, that those stereotypes around Lisa Simpson and her being vegetarian and how that she's, it's not looked upon very well amongst people.
I would say, like, for a lot of people, Lisa Simpson helped them or inspired them to go vegan, like, or vegetarian. That was a really, it was an important episode because that was mainstream. Like, how can you can't get bigger than The Simpsons. Well, you can't get bigger than The Simpsons. Simpsons are it. That is, like, they not only predict the future, they are everything that is right now. And they, like, that episode came out in 1995.
Yeah.
Right. So that was, like, how early was that?
Super early. Yeah. She was one of the first characters on television that was vegetarian.
So I'm going to take you to 2005. We're going to go to Scott Pilgrim versus the World, which was a film that starred Michael Cera and Kieran Culkin was in it. And it's Canadian. It's shot in Toronto. It's based on a Canadian comic book series. And Scott Pilgrim, the main character, falls in love with a woman named Fiona and is spending he has to battle all of her exes before he can win her heart.
Huh.
So one of the exes is a vegan. And he's stupid hot.
Ooh.
And seemingly unbeatable. Because he has vegan power.
I partake not in the meat, nor the breast milk, nor the ovum of any creature with a face.
Short answer, being vegan just makes you better than most people.
Bingo.
Hey man, question? I always wondered, how does not eating dairy products give you psychic powers?
Okay. You know how you only use 10% of your brain? That's because the other 90% is filled with curds and whey.
Did you learn that at Vegan Academy?
Go ahead and get snippy, baby. If you knew the science, maybe I'd listen to a word you say.
So how old is this?
2005 this came out. Well, the movie came out in 2005 and then the graphic novel came out.
So this is one of the positive versions of being a vegan?
Yeah, he's
interesting because majority of I found was negative stereotypes. Yeah. So this is good. This is a good change.
This is a good change, but it's funny because it's Fiona's ex-boyfriend. So he's not like in the context of Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
He is an antagonist, but I mean, really, like Fiona fell in love with somebody, they dated. I mean, you're neither, if you're somebody's ex, you're neither good nor bad. You're just a human. It just, the relationship didn't work out.
Right.
But then you see these people, they still have fondness for her. And so Scott has to battle him. And so
he uses his veganism.
He has to use
his veganism superpowers.
Yeah. And then you have to see like, how does Scott beat the vegan? Because the vegan is omnipotent. He's the omnipotent one. You're like, okay, it's all over for Scott.
So when was that recorded?
2010.
So 5 years previously.
Previous to that.
Yes. We're going to see the evolution now. I'm glad you brought that up because now we're seeing this positive conversation around veganism in television. In 2005, I have a clip from How I Met Your Mother about the stereotypical, you know, way that we would, that they represented vegans. And this is kind of the self-righteous vegan stereotype.
The lamb here is supposed to be great.
Oh, I'm a vegan. I wish I could tune out that moral voice inside me that says eating animals is murder. But I guess I'm just not as strong as you are.
That's because you need protein. I'll have the lamb.
But media for sure has propelled this idea of negative stereotypes of vegans, which aren't really true.
Yeah. Well,
and we're seeing a shift now, which is nice.
I mean, when has media, it's always a struggle. It takes time. Media is always like 10 steps behind the rest of the world because it seems to cling or is being produced by people that still have one or both feet in the old world. So there's an interesting, like, there's that show, American Gods, where it's the old gods versus the new gods. And I look at that in terms of media, where online, yeah, social media can be very destructive in so many ways, but it gives you access to so many different opinions and so many different perspectives and so many new pieces of literature that it really expands your horizons and makes you consider like so many other things. Like,
for sure. YouTubers too. There's so many vegan YouTubers.
So you have access to this whole world of veganism and vegetarianism that didn't exist before. But then when you're watching sitcoms, the people that are producing that or the people that are in charge of getting that on television probably still have antiquated ideas on what it is to be a vegan. And at the same time, so like on a personal level, just to go out, like if you go out in the world and you're proud of being vegan and you want to tell everybody and you're self-righteous, who cares? That's you. That's your life. That's not a reflection on me. You get it. That's your thing, right?
For sure. I just don't see, the one thing I don't agree with is pushing other ideals. I'm on the other side of that. You can be proud and be happy that you're vegan, but I don't think that you should be telling other people how to live their lifestyle because you think you're right. You know, I don't agree with that. Every vegan's going to like hiss at me now that probably thinks that they should be, but whatever. I don't care. That's why we have a podcast. I don't think that you should be pushing, anybody should be pushing any ideals onto other people. Especially if they're positive and you can educate, but there's ways of doing that than telling somebody that they're wrong and that you're right. And that's the only other option you have.
I'm
going to say something though, too, that you said about the archetype. Lisa Kimmel Fisher from 6 Feet Under is a character, and HBO actually has on the website to describe her character as a vegan and how they wrote her and how she would play her character, how like the character would be played and portrayed.
Oh, this is interesting.
Yeah, I thought so too when I found this. So what they write about the character is a strict vegan whose wardrobe consists of baggy dresses, overall and clogs. She didn't go to the movies because film, which is processed with gluten from animal hooves, contributes to the global slavery of animals. And when she wanted to get rid of ants in her kitchen, she sat on the floor and politely asked them to leave.
That's how they wrote her
character. That is her character description.
Because
for her to play in the show 6 Feet Under.
Because the only possible and reasonable character description for somebody who wants to be vegan has to be an extreme hippie persona character. Like, there's, you cannot be
a normal person that's vegan. Apparently not on television. Let's wrap this show up.
I'm going to wrap it up with, let's do our little things. And I'm going to wrap it up with a song that you might not know is an animal rights song.
Oh, okay.
So that's a fun little close piece out of
with,
trivia.
That's good. We'll close out with the animal's rights song.
So, but before
PETA
we go,
would be proud. Yeah.
We encourage everybody to reach out to us at any time because we would love to hear from you. You guys are a joy, a delight. You make us happy. Thank you for listening to our show.
Go to altpoprepeat.com. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, at altpoprepeat. You can go to Facebook at altpoprepeat podcast. Donate to us on Patreon. Please. Show us the money.
And don't forget that you can come and check us out on Clubhouse. We have a club there, Alt Pop Repeat. You notice there's a trend with everything.
Everything's Alt Pop
Repeat. Google Alt Pop Repeat. If you just land on altpoprepeat.com, it'd be fine. And join us on Clubhouse. We're going to be hosting regular chats there. And you might get to meet up with some of the guests from our show. You'll definitely see us. Mm-hmm. And we'll have a good time.
And hear us on Dash Radio every Friday and Saturday.
Yeah. Anyway, guys,
close us
so
out.
Much.
And also, yes, I do believe in animal rights. I'm not a PETA member, but I do, even though I do eat meat, I do love animals immensely.
And
so please be kind to animals. Please do.
You have introduced me to meat substitutes that I wouldn't have necessarily considered.
Those chicken nuggets are amazing.
Chicken nuggets. And let's not forget that smoked. That's
the
smoked
gouda.
You know smoked who the smoked gouda.
The smoked gouda is actually Lauren Toyota introduced to me to smoked gouda. I didn't know there was such thing as smoked gouda until I watched her stuff, and then I found the smoked gouda. So that goes back to Lauren.
So good. We killed that entire.
We did.
It was so.
It tastes exactly, and that's the other thing too. If people don't know, there's so many cheeses that are vegan cheeses that taste like real cheese, everything is good. You can even melt it on nachos and it melts like cheese.
We're going to be like talking about food and it's just going to fade out as Stand By You fades in.
That's a vegan song?
Yeah, it's an animal rights song. It was originally, it's a song that was done in.
Close us out with it, Marie.
Yeah, that's. Well, I'm not swaying it. I was just saying, like, if we were talking about like vegan foods, and then we just fade it out while we're talking about the vegan, and then we fade into the song because we had already teased that we're gonna.
Bye.
Bye. Bye, love us.
Bye.
I'll stand by you. I'll stand by you.